Session number 6125, reel 11.
Mr. Hill, tape 11.
Transport became available, they would get us out. But it would be a long job owing to the chaotic affairs of the railways and the roads due to the bombing and what have you. We went from our camp on walks. We walked down into the Japanese village. Some of the men tried to contact the female population of Japan that was available, but with little success, as far as I can gather. We did go down to the Chinese camp, and we took down items of food, quite a lot of clothing, but the difficulty we found, of course, giving the food over to the Chinese, which was all in tins, was to convey to the Chinese what actually was in the tins, if they a name and a label, if it didn't illustrate the contents, was useless to the Chinese because they might contain milk when they wanted meat. However, I've no doubt in the fullness of time they did discover what they meant. But I've no doubt they were all hungry and glad to see us and glad to see the tins even before they examined their contents. And we left them much happier than they were. Over 10 years, some of them had been in the camp. We also met up with some of the people from Shanghai who were in a camp a little bit further up the road, a matter of 2 miles, I suppose, up the road from us. We renewed old friendships. We met some of the Merchant Navy personnel that left us in Shanghai, and they had been working in some sort of munition area, I believe. They definitely weren't coal mining. We were, I think, probably the last of the coal mining areas. The war finished, I think, I believe I'm writing, saying on August the 8th. I think they got us away from the camp about a month later, on about the 8th of September. The Japanese guards had then drifted away from us. Those that had been very free with their beating up and punishments disappeared very early on. Though whether any of the prisoners would have taken reprisals, they said at the time before the war ended they would, but I only know of one case where reprisals were taken. Against the Japanese, and that happened to be against the interpreter by an American who was waiting to board a plane at Sapporo Airport, and the Japanese interpreter said, "Oh, I've been wanting to see you, Corporal Lesnovich," and Corporal Lesnovich said, "I've been waiting to see you, you son of a bitch," and he turned around and he struck him and knocked him unconscious to the ground. But that was the only time that I ever witnessed or knew of a reprisal being taken against the Japanese, apart from the time in Manila when, but that's jumping ahead a bit. I've on my way home. But on about September the 8th, I think it was, we had orders to entrain just outside the village where we were. They pulled the train into the siding, and we all entrained, and the accommodation was much, much better. I think it was two of us to four seats, and food and green tea was all provided for us.
What do you take with you when you're entrained?
Well, of course, we'd had an American drop, you see, of food and clothing. Incidentally, leaflets were dropped by the Americans, one of which I've got at home, all still covered by the mud of the prison camp, where it said that The food and clothing that was being dropped was American items, but they were not for use solely of Americans. They were for the use of all POWs because the British and other Allied powers were doing exactly the same in the case of American camps. British food and Allied food and clothing was being dropped to the Americans in American camps, so that it was a case of one for all and all for one. It just so happened this was American food and clothing that was and cigarettes that was coming down. So that, of course, is what we took with us. Quite a lot of cigarettes.
I had a diary with me.
Yes, I had kept a diary. Had it been known to the Japanese that a diary was being kept, they told us early on of this, at a prison war life, that we would be shot or beheaded. But I did keep this diary on old bits of brown paper, which they used to use as toilet paper. I think I started it in Shanghai. I certainly never had it before Shanghai, because when I was taken out of the water, apart from, as I said before, a shirt, I had nothing. But a record was kept in Shanghai of the bombings and the food. And to get it from Shanghai to Japan, it came in a little table which was hollowed out, and Major Lynch, the RAMC officer I mentioned earlier, was allowed to bring that table with him, and in that table, hollowed out, was kept my diary. And that I did recover from Major Lynch and bring home with me. I brought it home. The food on the train going up was much better, and we reached the airport, which is the northernmost airport in Japan, or it was then, called Sapporo. We went on, I think it was C-46, this was the name of the plane, American planes. We had quite a number of Americans with us who thought they were going to be taken all the way in American planes, but they weren't. But I think I've jumped ahead a bit, because some of the old Shanghai prison. One of the camps that we had visited down the road, where some of our old Shanghai friends were waiting to be taken out by American, good old American cruisers. It turned out to be they weren't taken off by American ships at all. They were taken off by British destroyers onto the aircraft carrier Triumph. And they were taken right down to Tokyo in British ships. But they didn't realise there were any British ships were there at all out in the Far East. However, we were taken out from North Japan by American C-46s. They were bucket seats planes, very sparse. Subsequently, it turned out to be parachute planes, flown by Americans, of course, who warned us not to touch certain levers, because they'd already unloaded a lot of Dutch repatriates over one of the seas of Japan. They didn't tell the Dutch not to pull that lever, and they allowed them to pull it, and of course all the Dutch went down into the ocean. But the Americans and the Australians, because we didn't know so much about it, weren't later the Dutch POWs collaborated in many cases with the Japanese, and of course the Americans and the Australians knew it, which we didn't, because in the particular camps that I were in, we never saw any Japanese, any Dutch. They were mostly picked up from the Java area. However, the Americans did have the job of transporting them out by plane, and they unloaded them over the Sea of Japan. Certain members of people, of personnel who had collaborated with the Japanese, stepped on board ships and never reached the destination. That happened to the case of certain British personnel too, so I believe. I never knew of any personal case myself, but I have heard from various people who came on certain boats that certain people who stepped on the boat were never seen again. They certainly never got off the other end and were written off as POW casualties. We flew out. It was a long flight from North Japan, and they told us they were taking us into Tokyo, and it was very, very hot. I remember in the plane, I sat between my pal and an American called Red, a big, rugged Marine, North China Marine. And when we were near in Tokyo, the pilot or his co-pilot said, "Right, we'll drop down now, running into Tokyo, so you'll be able to see what devastation has taken place over Tokyo, and let you know that we were fighting a war while you were wondering when we were coming to get you out." And they did drop down, and the devastation in and around Tokyo was absolutely horrific. And I turned to my pal and said, look, Jim, look down there. All I got from him was a groan. Turn around, red, look, another groan. They were airsick very badly. And we did eventually land down. We saw a plane go down in front of us. It didn't put its wheels down. That crashed. We sincerely hoped our driver would put his wheels down, and he did. He landed us safely and into Tokyo Airport. And then, of course, the debriefing was set for us. The first thing they did, as I remember, I can't really remember the sequence of the events, but I think when the first thing they did, they took us in delousing rooms where they put us under showers. Every bit of item of clothing was taken away from us. I don't think they allowed us to bring hardly any of the stuff, though they must have done, because I brought back my rice bowl and one or two items. So they must have allowed us to bring back certain items, but certainly no clothing were we allowed to bring back. We had to be stripped off, showers, deloused, and we went through DDT area where we were all sprayed with DDT. Incidentally, I think I mentioned earlier on that our nights were bad with fleas and lice. One of the very first things the Americans dropped us from the planes in the prisoner of war camp were packets of DDT. It was a chemical that we'd never seen before, but the instructions were to use it. And we put it all over our beds, and that was, although the excitement of coming home, that was the first night's sleep, and followed up, of course, by a good night's sleep, that we'd had for really months. We got free of all the lice, because we didn't realise what was keeping us away, but the lice and the fleas and the general bugs, bed bugs and beetles, all succumbed to this really wonderful, turned out to be DDT powder. And, of course, when we reached Tokyo, and they were taking us through the delousing sheds, after the spray, they were just puffing all this material over to us into the next hut. They reclothed us into the next hut, which was a long aircraft hangar, and there was all kind of things imaginable. There was fruit, Hershey bars, the equivalent of a Cadbury's chocolate, razors, combs, every item. It was really wonderful what they did for us, kitted us up. Everything was beautifully organised. You just followed on and you just, you know, you just help yourself to relive it all again. It's really, you know, we went to the American quarters and had our first meal. Those of us that could eat, ate. One of the things I remember that they had, the Americans, was lashings of fruit salad, and you're eating irons, as we used to call them, our plates, and our knives and forks, and the mugs that we were issued with. That was all sterilised. They used oil quite a lot, burners, and they had big oil drums full of boiling water into which you dipped all your utensils after you'd used them for eating. And I don't think we stayed in Tokyo the night. With what they put us on the trucks to take us down to Yokohama, which I think, if I remember right, is the port. And there again, a strange thing happened. The Americans, of course, had only just landed, and the Japanese transports weren't petrol-driven. They were a kind of a charcoal affair and gas. And the Americans weren't used to driving these, and of course they didn't know the roads, and the roads were badly rutted. And they loaded us onto these open trucks and took us from Tokyo to Yokohama. And I remember we were going through rainstorms and dry and rainstorms and dry. We'd get wet and we'd dry and we'd wet and we'd dry. And they were going like bats out of hell with these trucks. And we went round a corner, we right into a high tension cable, brought the cable down, and the cable just bounced above our heads in these trucks. And the Americans said, oh, for God's sake, don't move. We don't know really, you know, what's going to happen. Eventually, they got us off. And, of course, we were all very, very frightened men. We began to fear then, in case we really wouldn't make it, even after all this time. And all what we'd been through, we didn't want any hiccups now. So we begged the Americans to take it easy. Same thing happened with the Canadians, as I'll mention later. But they got us off the truck and they got us onto American transports. And we went by American transport down into Manila, into the Philippines. This was a several day and nights journey. They looked after us fairly well, though I don't think they were really happy about being lumbered with and Far East POWs. I don't think those particular Americans took really kind to us, as I remember it. However, we were certainly well fed by the standards of what we were previously been used to. And we went down into Manila, and we went into an Australian come American camp. The Australians, I think, were responsible for general camp routine and discipline, and the Americans were responsible for the feeding of us. It got very hot then, because we were in early September or middle of September, and it was very, very hot in Manila, as I remember it. We were under canvas. The Americans supplied us with 3 cans of beer and 5 cigars per man per day. And as a part of a daily issue, you could go down to the cookhouse or the canteens, and all was free. If you wanted more, you simply had more. The dining halls, there was unlimited food. And, of course, the trouble was we hadn't been, apart from a quick run over in Tokyo after delousing, we hadn't gone into undergone any thorough medication or medical examination. And the food we found was very rich for us, and the American style of giving you chicken and then swamping it all in maple syrup with their hot cakes, you know, they seem to mix up sweet and savoury all on the one dish, which we, although apart from being too rich, was really not to our taste. Anyhow, though, of course, one might say you'd be glad of anything, but it was the richness of it was beating quite a number of them. Suddenly coming from rice and bits of fish and hedgerow soup to all the glorious American and Australian food which was made available to us. However, I was there for about 3 days and I began to feel very ill, very sick. So ill, in fact, we were under canvas. They were bell tents, about 12 to a tent, or maybe an 8 to a tent. We weren't too crowded anyway, waiting for a shipment home and to the States. As I say, I began to get very ill, and my pal took me right down to see an American doctor. Rather a strange affair, he was under canvas. As I say, it was very hot. He had a radio going. He was smoking a cigar. I think he was an American commander, naval personnel. "What's wrong with you, soldier?" I told him. He said, "I want a specimen of your water." So I gave him a specimen of water. Still the radio blaring, still smoking his cigar, and I was feeling iller and iller and iller, and sicker and sicker. And he just took a glass of my water. He said, "You've got jaundice." He said, "You stay here." I said, "Well, no, I'm not staying here." I want to go back. I want to get home. So he said, "All right, you can go back to your tent." But he said, "I'll see you in the morning." He said, "Because I'm sure I will." Well, I got very much worse during the night. And they took me down with my bit of kit down to the same place. I thought I'd see you. Yeah, he said, you've got yellow jaundice. Infected hepatitis, he called it. He said, I'll arrange for an ambulance to take you to the American hospital. And you'll get medication. So I said goodbye to my pal, very much down in the dumps, because I thought it was going to be a delay in me getting home. And within a few hours, I think it was, I got into, was put aboard an American ambulance with two American female nurses, two American sailors or ambulance personnel driving. We went out in the country. The ambulance stopped. I think I was the only patient. The two American nurses got out, and the two American Navy men got out, and I didn't see them for about half an hour, and then they got aboard, looked very self-satisfied, as I remember it, and eventually ended up in the American hospital. Unfortunately, I was put in a ward, I think, if I remember correctly, about 20 beds, may have been less. I was the only person in there for when I was put there, and about an hour later, a lot of patients arrived. Apparently, they'd been out to a canteen or something, and they came over to address me in a foreign tone. And I said, "I'm British," and they then, rude as possible, said, "Oh, he's British." And they said, "And we're Dutch, and we're proud of it." And of course, having heard how the Dutch behave, they put my back up, and when the American sister came round, which is they call the American charge nurses, we call them. They call their male personnel sisters. The American sister came round, and I said, I wanted moving out of this ward because they're all Dutch. And he said, will you go to American ward? I said, yeah, certainly. So I got moved to an American ward, and that night I was too ill to eat anything, and they were taking tests on me. And they said if I didn't eat, they'd have to feed me. But I got over that because that morning a British naval officer arrived and he said he was the commander of HMS Glory. Were there any British personnel there who wished to go home by the Glory? And, of course, I made my number to him and it was arranged that the following morning I would be collected and taken home on the Glory via Canada. Well, the morning came, I found out where I was. They were going to be collectors, and went up to the exit gate, and there was a big hue and cry for me, and they said, you're supposed to be a bed patient. You must go on a stretcher. So they got a stretcher and stuck me on that and went by ambulance down to the docks, went to a little tender, put on board a little tender down below, in this tender, and taken out what turned out to be the middle of the harbour. You could hear a lot of clattering going on up top. We apparently hove to. And took my turn, and I was brought up from down below, put on top, still on a stretcher. And I looked up at the side, and was lo and behold, beside an aircraft carrier. And they were lowering by crane a small wooden platform. What they were doing, they were putting the stretcher on this small wooden platform containing the patient and swinging him right up into the side, right up in the air, right up the side of the aircraft carrier, bringing him board and collaring him and handing him over to the ship's persons. And my turn came, and I was handed over and taken down into the bowels of the ship. It turned out to be the hangar that had been cleared of all the aircraft. And what they'd done, they'd welded metal beds together in bunks. And I was given a lower metal bunk in the hangar. And then we saw our first British woman for 3 years and 8 months. There were British Red Cross women there, and American, and as you were, Australian nurses were on board the ship. The American, the Australian nurses were all in blue, and our nurses were all in red, with big red crosses on. And they said, no diets today, boys. It's roast beef and Yorkshire pudding. Of course, I unfortunately was too ill to heat it, but in the fullness of time, I got better, and we went across by the Glory to Victoria, British Columbia.
You did mention that you saw some reprisals in Manila earlier.
Oh, yes. Unfortunately, the Australians marched some Japanese prisoners of war up through the camp when we were in Manila, and these were set upon by the some of the prisoners of war who had grudges to settle. It was a very, very foolish thing for them to march Japanese prisoners of war through released prisoners of war. Incidentally, when we were in, I think it was Tokyo, we went before intelligence officers who debriefed us on all war crimes that we knew of that had been committed and had been committed to us, and they assured us that all those cases would be thoroughly investigated. To return to the Glory, when we arrived in Victoria Harbour, we were on top deck, and of course we were bringing home some Canadians as well, who some of them had been in Hong Kong, and all the ships in the harbour all used their sirens, and they gave us a really most wonderful welcome into the harbour. We were all standing on top. I remember waving, shouting and cheering. We had our almost individual nurses, I suppose, us who were sick. We were not all sick that were on the Glory. And it was really a wonderful homecoming to Canada they gave us. And they handed us, as we were brought down the gangway, they loaded us into ambulance and they pushed cards of welcome into our hands. And we went through the township, I suppose it was, of Victoria, into the entrance of a very large building, which turned out to have been a girls' school. And this had been converted into a hospital for returning.